You're not gonna say it, somebody should. Let's talk about two time. Let's talk about bum one, yeah. Asking the questions that nobody could. Like, where are the bone thugs and are they in harmony? You're a helpful snowman.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another one of these. Thanks for joining me in my automobile. Sometimes I'm like, I gotta break these up and do the car ones, you know, out of order and put studio ones inside. And then I'm just like, for why? For who? Who cares? Well, I think last time we left you, we were on our way to Scream Fest at Lakeside Amusement Park. Now, this is an amusement park in the Denver area, formerly in kind of a shitty neighborhood. Not like a real shitty neighborhood, just like a medium neighborhood. That's now, you know, I mean, we were in a house there that's like a two-bedroom, very small house. It's like the size of a small two-bedroom condo, and it's like $350,000. So that's where I live. I don't have any of this, like, I think it's weird, because I don't have any sort of Colorado native nonsense in my brain. Like, I think that's stupid, because I'm not a Colorado, I mean, I was born, my parents weren't born here. I don't know, you know, I was born here, but I had nothing to do with that, right? That was not my choice. But I do, like, well, I think one of two things is going to have to happen, right? Like, the state is either going to have to be like, hey, we need to accept there's a lot of people moving here and create, you know, housing infrastructure and so on to support that. Or, you know, the more people who move here, the more they'll be like, oh, the reasons I moved here are not valid anymore. You know, I think what was nice about living here is, like, for example, what's nice about living in Greeley is you're an hour away from Denver, you're an hour away from the mountains, you're 45 minutes from Fort Collins, you're an hour from Boulder. But, you know, as that doubles, I mean, that's not going to be true anymore, right? As you, like, you know, Denver, I think, would have been a nice place to live for some time, because it's like, you know, it's got some of the goodness of a city, but it's not, like, crazy crowded. It's not a crazy environment. You know what I mean? It's like a mid-level city, but now it's, like, becoming a huge city. But they haven't done any shit, like, you know, put in a fucking Subway, by which I mean the thing, not the sandwich shop. I hate that the sandwich shop is called that, you know, for the rare times that it fucks me up. I'm just like, God damn it, like, why couldn't you come up with anything else? Subway, eat fresh. It's almost like now the actual Subway, the train, needs to rebrand and be like, well, we got to call it something else because this other thing that has the same name is bigger than us. So there you go. Anyway, we went to this thing. It was pretty fun. Now, here's what's interesting about it. It's like a benefit for some film society, you know, whatever. And you pay like 50 or 60 bucks and you get a ticket and you can ride unlimited rides. Because normally the way it works at Lakeside, you pay like, I don't know, $4 or something to get inside. And then you pay by the ride. Like, you buy tickets. It's like a carnival. It's like a permanent carnival. So you buy tickets, you ride the ride, so on and so forth. But this, you got unlimited rides and unlimited drinks. Which, when you think about it, I feel like, you know, film society sounds like a place full of smarts, right? Like, a bunch of dudes sitting around, they got white hair, but they're wearing, like, some crazy scarf. Like a bunch of professors or something. And they're all sitting around deciding, like, how should we raise money or whatever? And somebody's like, I have a really good idea. Let's get everyone loaded and put them on roller coasters. And nobody was like, you know, that idea is a solid four, but maybe we should reconsider. Maybe we should do something else. Instead, they're like, Yeah, sounds great. Sounds like a perfect thing. They also have, so up until about 2 weeks before we left, I thought this was a horror-related thing because it's like Scream Fest, and it's fall. And I was like, oh, okay, so maybe they do like a, you know, it's like haunted. Because, you know, like Six Flags will have haunted whatever. They'll have Knott's Scary Farm at Knott's Berry Farm, all that shit. But it turns out it has nothing to do with that. And they have a giant screen, like one of those giant inflatable screens, on which they just show people, like, tweeting and Instagramming pictures of what they're doing at Screamfest. Which seems kind of stupid, because it's like, okay, I'm looking at a picture of someone on a roller coaster that I just rode 35 seconds ago. Like, who is that for, and why does it exist? Why does that screen show that? Or, you know, it's two sides. You could show a movie on the other side. Why the fuck not? So anyway, also, like, so Lakeside is an interesting amusement park because it's kind of like a... It's not as polished as some other, you know, in this way, it's more like a carnival than the ticket situation. It's not like going to fucking Disneyland where you're like, oh, every detail was thought through and blah, blah, blah. I mean, we rode this roller coaster where we're getting on it. The whole thing is stopped. The lady working there looks like she's 12 and she's like, oh, we had to reboot the roller coaster, to which I was like, A, what does that even mean? B, I can't fucking believe that this old-ass roller coaster has some kind of computer. And I sure as hell didn't see any evidence of a computer. I mean, I guess they must have some kind of computer on most roller coasters, right? But this is like a tiny roller coaster, you know, that there's one set of cars, so it's not like you're going to crash into another one. And it's so short and small that it makes, like, three revolutions of the same track. So I'm not really sure why it has a computer or what could go so wrong on this computer that they would need to do that, but that's what it was. You know, it'd be kind of like if you went to a gumball machine and put a quarter in and they're like, we're going to need to reboot that one. And you're like, reboot? What the fuck? I would think... You would throw a big switch like a fucking trying to bring a Frankenstein to life, and it would just go, and it does one thing. So anyway, they're rebooting it, and then we get on the ride, and we're getting ready to go. This guy comes walking over. He's like some kind of maintenance guy, I assumed, because he just comes walking through the tracks and stuff where you're like, this is like the start of a video you see on one of those websites where they show videos of people being decapitated. It's like, holy fuck, this seems like a bad idea. And he comes walking up and then is basically berating the people at the ride, saying, I told you not to reboot this. And, you know, like, we're strapping in at this point. Doesn't seem like a terribly unsafe ride. But I was like, I don't exactly want to be stuck on this same roller coaster for, like, 7 hours. I mean, I think you could probably jump off. I don't know if you could while it was moving. That seems dangerous. But, anyway, that's what happened on the first ride. Then we rode like a tower drop kind of ride, which was great. Those are the best rides. They're terrifying. They're quick. And, you know, you get all the fear during the anticipation because you're sitting there watching other people do it. And just thinking like, oh, this is going to be scary. I feel like a tower drop ride, there's almost no way for it not to be scary. Or not to be thrilling. I mean, and it doesn't make me dizzy. But here's an odd discovery I made. So when we went to Dollywood, I tried wearing a motion sickness patch like someone would wear on a cruise. That didn't do shit. But, so like 2 or 3 years ago, I was in Vegas. And what I did was I rode the roller coaster and I felt like shit afterwards. You know, I was, like, motion sickness, whatever. I felt like garbage. And then I waited about an hour. Then I was like, oh, I guess I should try and eat something because I hadn't eaten anything. And, you know, it was getting hard to tell. What is hunger? What is sickness? What is whatever? So I ate something, felt the same. Then I had a beer, and I felt fine. At this Scream Fest, There was only one ride we did that I was like, oh, this is not good. But even that, like, I felt fine afterwards. So maybe, I don't know, there must be some science to this. Maybe Pete needs to be a little loaded to ride a roller coaster. I think I was just talking about how I don't have to be drunk to have a good time, but maybe at a theme park I do. Maybe that's a crucial element for me. Now, what I don't know is, do most theme parks serve liquor? I have no idea. Anyway, so we rode some rides. Lakeside is in some state of disrepair. I mean, like, the first thing we rode was a, I take it back. We rode a train that goes around the lake that it's side of. But that's not really a ride. We rode that because it's the only thing you can bring drinks on. So so we did that for sure. And we're going around, and it's like the one side is the lake, and that's pretty cool, and you can see the park across the lake. But the other side, like immediately there, is a tall chain link fence, and like, you know, you're like behind a Walmart, like in their delivery bay or something, and it's just like, this is unpleasant. There is a long tunnel, which is pretty cool, and it's kind of scary because it like reeks of diesel in there. So you're like, I might die in here. This is suddenly went from a children's ride to a sort of a thrill ride of sorts. Not really the thrill I was planning to have, where it's like, I might just die. But a thrill nonetheless. I rode a mouse coaster by myself, you know, because it just worked out that way. There's a guy just like, something's dragging under his car. And he's just driving along. It's kind of amazing how people will just... I mean, it looks like a full construction barrel or something. You're just like, you don't hear that in your car. I mean, where are you going? He's just cruising along. I guess just he figures, like, whenever you hear a scraping sound, just keep driving. The road will scrape it away until it's gone, whatever it is. Whether it's an important piece of your car or just a barrel or a man that you hit, it'll... Time heals all wounds, right? This mouse coaster was like probably the ride I rode when I really shouldn't have been riding rides anymore. I definitely hit my head because it like goes down a dip and there's just this exposed metal bar on the car and, you know, my head tilts back and just whacks right into it. Someone else in our group did the same exact thing. So I was like, well, okay, it wasn't just me. I was like, maybe they should... I'm not like a big safety advocate all the time, but it seems like maybe there could be some safety features added to this ride. I don't know. We then drove go-karts, which was interesting because it was like, I guess this is fine to do when you're loaded. So we're watching the people before us drive the go-karts, you know, and this girl like way overshot the finish line and is around the corner, and then the guy has to like run out there and be like, keep drive all the way back around. I mean, it's like one oval shaped loop, and he has to be like, drive back to the start, you know, drive back to the start. And she doesn't get it, so she just gets out and like kind of staggers off, so he just drags the car back to the start. So we drive, I get out in front and I'm driving, and you know, you take, I don't know, like 5 or 6 laps. It takes like a minute and a half, and then they put on this red stoplight, so it's like, okay, I'll stop on my next time around. So I pull over, I stop, and then Poonmaster Flex, who'd had a couple cocktails, plowed into the back of me at full speed. No brakes, wasn't trying to stop. Now, I was very confused what had happened, because then afterwards, you know, so I ended up having to like drive around like 2/3 of the lap, and I was in some pain, because I got hit. While I was just sitting there in a go-kart, I just got hit. And I was like, why did you do that? That was painful and whatever. And she was like, we didn't get to hit at all. Like, you were just driving. And I was like, yeah, it was go-karts. And she didn't articulate herself that night. But the next day is when I discovered that she thought this was bumper cars, not go-karts. And so was confused as to why everyone was just driving and not slamming into each other. And so... when it got to the end of the race and she saw I was stopped there, was like, well, this is the time to slam into somebody, is right now. And so She didn't even know until the next day, until we were talking it through, and I was like, you know, that was not, because she kept calling them bumper cars, and she's like, well, we weren't even bumping on the bumper cars, and I was like, they were go-karts, not bumper cars, like, it's not the same thing, you know, and she's like, and I was like, no, seriously, it was a driving race. It's like in NASCAR, you don't really slam into the other cars, as opposed to a demolition derby. And then she was kind of like, oh, well, I thought we were on the bumper cars. So we did that. It was good, though. It was a good time. I think a good time was had by all. You know, and we supported the arts in some way. I don't really understand how that supported the arts. I don't know how they make money from that. I feel like they're one inevitable lawsuit away from losing any money that they're making from this. But, so be it. Right? As long as we had a good time. That's what they always say in my mind when I ask this question of them in my mind. I was going to mention that. So, I don't know. I don't know if people who listen to this are like a literary bunch or not. But I've been working on this column. And it reminded me of this thing that I really hate, which is there's a short story that, like, if you take an English class in college, you're going to read it. And it's called The Yellow Wallpaper by Charlotte Perkins Gilman. Now, The Yellow Wallpaper is basically about this woman who seemingly goes insane. And the end of the story, she's, like, sort of hastily describing how she's climbing around inside the wallpaper, or, like, between the wallpaper and the wall, and, like, she's insane, right? And so I'm writing this column right now that's about, like, the worst required reading for school, because it's, like, back-to-school time and shit. And I remembered The Yellow Wallpaper and was like, oh my god. I remembered The Yellow Wallpaper because first I remembered Lord of the Flies. Now, here's the connection there, which was, so Lord of the Flies has a scene where all the boys kill this pig and eat it, right? And literary analysis people describe this as the rape scene, right? Like, it's symbolic of rape. And you read it, and it's like, okay, a bunch of boys surround this mother pig, and it's, you know, it's in the book specifically says it's female, even though I don't know how you would necessarily, as a 9-year-old boy, I wouldn't fucking know, but whatever. And they kill it, and it describes, you know, this boy and his spear and everything, and it's like, this is like a cornerstone of literary analysis. If there's something in the scene that can be directly equated to a penis or a vagina, you've hit pay dirt. Like, go no further, because you've made it. You've arrived at Literary Analysis 101. So, like, this scene happens, and it's like, we read this in, like, 8th grade, right? And this teacher was insisting, you know, that this is the rape scene and da-da-da-da. And I've, you know, like, as I've gone through life, I've kind of softened my view of it, which at first was like, this is really annoying and stupid. And now my view of it was like, I think this teacher may not have really understood what literary analysis is. Because, like, I mean, she had a test question on a test we took that specifically asked about the rape scene. You know what I mean? And, like, how that worked and how that functioned. And I was like, you know, I think that's... And now, looking at it now, I mean, if I was an 8th grade English teacher, I may introduce that that's a running theory about it or an idea that people have about it, but I don't think I would be like, that's what it is. I think I'd be like, that's how some people have interpreted it, right? Because it's a, you know, it's pretty easy to interpret it as the thing that it actually is, right? It's pretty easy to look at it and be like, these boys, these, like, nice schoolboys have turned into, you know, savage beasts in no time flat, right? And that's, like, alarming and disturbing. And I think that you could read the scene as that and still derive similar point to what, you know, similar to what it is as a rape scene. Which is why I don't love that kind of literary analysis. Because it's like, okay, so what if it is symbolic of a rape? What does that mean? You know what I mean? Like, and what's the difference between that and the sort of literal interpretation of it's a vicious murder of a pig by a group of boys who kind of surround the pig and kill it, and it's brutal and difficult and bad, and signifies them transform. You know what I mean? I guess where I struggle with that one in particular is like, well, you know, I'm not going to get into a debate of like, what's worse, rape or murder? Because it's like, I mean, both are horrible. And, you know, having not been raped or murdered, I don't really know. But I'll say that both pretty bad. I mean, both pretty much the worst things that can happen to, you know, a person like that, right? And so it's like, I mean, I guess it could be a rape, and maybe that escalates it or whatever. And maybe he wanted to include a rape in the story, although that seems kind of wild to me, and not, I don't really understand it, because it's sort of like, I don't know, these are adolescent boys or pre-adolescent boys. They always struck me as a little younger than whatever, and it's like, well, they're not having sex before they get on the island, and now it's like they've basically it's become Oz, bitch. I mean, that doesn't make a ton of sense to me, but whatever. My point being, it either way kind of works, and so if the literal translation of it works pretty much as well as the sort of literary interpretation of it, then what's the point of the literary interpretation? Right? Like, what are you adding to the conversation by being like, but what if it's a rape? And it's like, well, yeah, that would also be very bad, but kind of similar to what we're talking about here. It's not like he's a, you know, he wrote a scene about fucking, well, he wrote a scene about fucking. It's not like he wrote a scene that's like from J.G. Ballard's Crash, where it's like a car crashing into another car is like a sexual thing, right? Because that is like, eh, okay. That's going to require some interpretation. Or, you know, like, I come back to it a lot, but like a Fight Club, and you're like, yeah, I think there's something more going on here than these dudes just punching each other. I mean, we'd have to talk about what it is, but I don't think that I can take dudes just punching each other as a literal, you know. If I'm asking why, I don't think the answers provided by the book are the real answers. I think we're supposed to take those answers and then say, like, well, okay, these are the answers as given to me by a character in this book, right? So then that brings us to The Yellow Wallpaper, which is a story I hate. You know, I started my hate for literary interpretation and criticism of that magnitude in eighth grade, because I was like, this is dumb. This is also a teacher, by the way, this Lord of the Flies, who insisted, not that it could be interpreted or stand in for a rape, that it's a literal rape. And, you know, the only question is, like, who was probably raped, but not, nothing else. You know, it's like, oh, that's definitely what happened. And it's like, I don't know. She's also the teacher who told us it was irony. You know, the biggest example of irony she showed us was, like, okay, in a John Steinbeck story, The Pearl, there's a boy named Coyotito, which means, like, little coyote, right? And as these guys are out trying to kill the boy's father, for whatever reason, they hear what they think is a coyote, you know, barking at the moon. But really, it's Coyotito crying. And so one of the guys just fires his rifle into the air to shut up this coyote. And the bullet just happens to strike the baby and kill the baby. And it's like, that's ironic because, you know, his name is Coyote. And they thought it was a coyote. And it sort of was. And I was like, no, that's fucking stupid. A, that's stupid. And B, I mean, what a coincidence. A coincidence like that. See, I'm gonna just, like, attack all the fucking classic literature in the world here. A coincidence like that is not interesting in an invented story, because it's like, well, you made that happen. It's not like that happened and you're reporting on it. You set that up, so it's like, can you believe what a coincidence that they just shot into what they thought was the darkness into the air, into the night sky, And what really happened is they shot a baby in a cave, you know what I mean? And it just happened to strike this baby and kill it. And this baby is, like, central to the plot and so on. And it's like, well, no, that's not interesting. You made that happen. You invented that yourself, John Steinbeck. It's not like, you know, this isn't a fucking John Krakauer book where if that happened and it really happened, you'd be like, well, that's some fucked up shit. I mean, that's crazy. That would be interesting. That would be a coincidence. That I would be willing to hear about the irony there of the name and the being shot. But it's like, yeah, he knew the baby was going to be shot. And so to say, like, and then I made it so there was a coyote, isn't that ironic? And I'm like, not really, because you just set everything up that way. So is it ironic if you set things up to happen a certain way in fiction and then they happen the exact way they're supposed to? I don't think so, John Steinbeck. I'm calling you out, motherfucker. So I keep, like, deviating from the yellow wallpaper because it's like, and another thing. You know, oh, reading Chaucer, this is dumb. That's like reading the scripts for a fucking episode of Cheers 700 years in the future. That would be a crazy thing to do. You know, if someone was doing that, we'd be like, you're fucking nuts. And I gotta believe that someone from Chaucer's time would be like, you're fucking nuts. A, because this doesn't even make sense to you. It has to be explained every sentence along the way, and it's not that exciting. I mean, the jokes are not that good. It's like, oh, that means he farted. Oh, good one. Thank you. It's not even like reading a Cheers script. It's like reading a, it's like reading the script for Dumb and Dumber 700 years in the future, you know? And it's like, oh, and then Lloyd had diarrhea. No, Lloyd didn't have diarrhea. The other guy did. This is important. I want to get my Dumb and Dumber facts straight. I don't want any Dumb and Dumber scholars coming back at me. The yellow wallpaper. So here's what I hate about the yellow wallpaper. You read this story, and I must have gone over this like in four different classes in school. And there's just not enough detail in the ending. Like, it's a very ambiguous ending. And that's fine. I mean, I recognize that that's something I do not enjoy. A super ambiguous ending. Not an ending that's like The Sopranos, where you're like, well, what, you know, not much actually happened. I'm talking about an ambiguous ending where you're like, I don't know if what was being told to me was what happened at all, was someone's weird interpretation of what happened, was just a complete mistake. You know, I have no idea. And so what I don't like about talking about that, like, it's fine that that exists. It's fine that it goes that way. It would be hard to end that story any other way. What I don't like about the way this story works, though, is then you talk about it in class, and it turns into this, like, at some point the class takes a turn, and I feel like this is when the teachers are like, ah, now they're getting it, you know, they're thinking critically and da-da-da-da, and I'm like, they're just making up crazy shit, because there's not enough in this story to really say, well, I don't think there's enough, you know, I've never heard an English teacher, when discussing that story and someone has some asinine theory about it, like, oh, I think she was in the womb the whole time, you know, and the yellow wallpaper is about her breaking through the barrier of the whatever and, you know, coming into the world. It's like her amniotic fluid is clearly represented by this, you know, And it's just like, I've never heard someone give some interpretation like that and then a teacher be like, I mean, I'm not quite there with you yet. Do you have, like, maybe some more? Can you point into the text what made you think that? You know what I mean? Like, what made you think that way? And, you know, how can I bring me there with you? Take me on the journey that gets me to where you are, which is saying, oh, yeah, this definitely happened. So anyway, it's like, I think, well, okay, what ended up happening was, you know, I was thinking about this the other day and I was so upset about it, because this is the thing I get upset about, I guess, is that, see, making up these theories and shit is for nerds, but being upset about the whole concept is for cools like me. That's one thing we gotta get straight. But I was so unhappy about this and wanted to, like, prove the point, so I spent my lunch break at work and, you know, typed out, I don't know, like, 3,000 to 5,000 words of theories related to Demolition Man. As far as, like, maybe, you know, maybe both characters were in cryosleep, and this was the entirety of the movie after they're put into cryo prison occurs in John Spartan's head, right? And then when you come up with these theories, it's easy to, like, go back through the movie and come up with perfectly reasonable things that support that theory. You know, so for example, let's say my theory, you know, theory A, this entire thing is happening in John Spartan, the Stallone character's head, right? He's put into cryo sleep and he's having a dream. So the first part of the movie happens as we see it, and then after he's in cryo prison, this is what happens. And then you start thinking about it, and you're like, you know, there's a lot of things that you could say to support that theory. For example, Stallone and Wesley Snipes, Simon Phoenix, seem to have a pretty similar, like, way of speaking in terms of, like, when they're fighting each other, they have their quippy one-liners, and it's almost as if they're being written by one person, which would stand to reason if they're all being written inside John Spartan's head, right? That's why they all kind of sound the same. It would make sense that the future has some futuristic elements, such as, you know, self-driving cars and things like that. But overall, as far as, like, thinking about, you know, future technology and shit like that, it's not very wild. And in fact, like, I would say one of the big sort of oversights in Demolition Man in terms of futuristic technology and a lot of things that think about the future, they don't really think about the internet and what that is and how that works. So that makes a lot of sense, too. It would make sense that, you know, certain weird things about the future, for example, they listen to show tunes all the time. Well, that's, maybe those are the only songs that are really in John Spartan's head. Maybe he was never, like, a big music guy. And so it's just like, well, that fills in that detail. And maybe, you know, Taco Bell becoming a big restaurant makes sense because, again, it's happening in John Spartan's head. So he only has the available information already in his head, right? And, like, he's making it up as he goes along. And because he's not actually in the future or from the future doesn't look that impressive or different from the present. So there you go. And see, that's all you have to do. You can come up with a bunch of shit like that and then be like, aha, here we go. Here's how this works. What if this is a sort of Total Recall-esque fantasy on the part of Lenina Huxley, a.k.a. Sandy Bullock, right? Which then you're like, well, that has certain things that make sense to it, too. Like, that could be, from beginning to end, almost, you know, her what's happening in her head. So she kind of sees this movie play out. The first part of the movie is very much like an action movie, right? Oh, shit. Sneezed in my microphone. It's a fucking action movie. It's like a stereotypical action movie to the point of, like, being almost comical, right? That it's so stereotypical. And then, you know, she comes in. Now she has a sort of not well-thought-out romance with the hero, which, again, goes into the theory because it's like, well, if this is a fantasy of hers, much like the fantasy possibly in Total Recall, then, yeah, it doesn't have to make sense, like, the relationship. It doesn't have to be like, I don't know if I buy these people really would like each other or get to know each other that well. Duh. It would make sense that, like, the sex sequence, you know, which is one of the weirder sequences in the movie, would make sense. Because then you're like, well, if she is a virgin, and see, extra points if you turn it to sex. If she's a virgin, then perhaps her idea of sex is expressed in this sort of electronic non-touching sort of way, right? Which would make sense, Because if she was, you know, being an attractive Sandra Bullock and not necessarily seeming to want to be a virgin, it seems like she would have ample opportunity, but has not had sex for whatever reason, and therefore, in her fantasies, sex doesn't involve touching or whatever. So see, this is the thing. Anyone can do this. Anyone can come up with, take something, just take a movie or a book or something like that, decide what you want the theory to be, and then look at everything that supports that theory. Bam, you've just done like literary criticism on the level of what I have seen in my lifetime of the yellow wallpaper. You've done it. Congratulations. Big hand to you. I mean, you know, it was touch and go there for a while, but you really pulled it out at the end, and you really have something to be proud of there. So here's what's weird about it, I think. I think what's weird about it is that, you know, I'm an English major. I like talking about books. I like this kind of thing. But I think I don't like talking about books or literature in such an abstract way. I much prefer, for example, I'm reading The Outsiders right now for a book club, right? And there's a part where these two kids get jumped by a group of five bigger kids. And one is basically drowning Kid A in a fountain. And then Kid A kind of like blacks out, comes to, he's out of the fountain. And Kid B has stabbed and killed Kid C. You know, and it's just a body there and the two kids who got jumped. So what we have here is a kid who stabbed another kid and, you know, immediately is like, I killed that kid, I stabbed him. And there's really not much interpretation to be had there in terms of what happened, the chain of events. But I think this is more interesting because, okay, the first question here is like, how did this really go down? What really happened, right? How did it all happen? What events took place? So on and so forth. Which, you know, I'm assuming as the book goes on, it tells you more about that and so on. But part B, which I think is the more interesting idea of interpretation, is like, did he do the wrong thing or not? Because, you know, the context of the book and everything, you're like, I mean, basically these same five dudes jumped this other kid one time and pretty, you know, kind of beat him halfway dead. And left him in a field. And so this time, when he sees the one guy drowning his friend, he fucking stabbed him and killed him. And you're like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know if that's wrong. That's kind of a morally ambiguous thing. That, I think, is interesting. That, I think, is worth discussing. And that, I think, is like using your brain in literature. That's like reading something and then using it for critical thinking. Because I think you can critically think about that and whatever. And I think even the A part, like what exactly happened, is useful critical thinking. Because it's like, hey, if you ever go and sit on a jury or some shit like that, chances are you're going to be hearing about an event that, you know, nobody credible or who doesn't have a stake in either side witnessed from part A to Z, right? You're going to have to, like, there's going to be some interpretation going on. There's going to be like some, hey, did anyone actually see this happen? You know what I mean? So like, I think that in those two ways, like that scene is really useful. And it's like, that's a good version, I think, of literary interpretation. But when you just have a bunch of crazy shit on the page and it doesn't, when what's on the page doesn't really rule out anything. When anything is on the table, I mean, where this could be, you know, in the yellow wallpaper, it's like, well, this could be an expression of how women felt trapped and da-da-da-da, and it's not literal, or it could be like, we're basically seeing the beginning of the ring here. It's just not that interesting to me. Like, when there's no parameters, when there's nothing blocked out, it's not super interesting to me. I mean, it would be hard to make an argument that this was like an, you know, statement about vegetarianism, but not impossible. I mean, it's not impossible. There's just too much left on the table. So it's like, well, why even talk about this? You know, because someone could say theory A, and it's just as credible as theory B, C, D. You know what I mean? And if it was like, point to the passages that support that, it's like, well, this thing that, you know, could be interpreted any of 100 different ways. So that's the thing. That's why I hate the yellow wallpaper. I just feel like there's nothing there. Like, there's something there, but there's nothing. It's not worth talking about that long. And, you know, it's a piece that so many English teachers use to introduce, I think, the concept of literary criticism and, like, how that works and, you know, what do you think happened and ambiguity and unreliable narrators and stuff like that. But I'm like, I don't know, man. I think this is like, I understand introducing this concept, but whatever. It doesn't seem like it works anyway. I mean, so many people refuse to interpret anything as other than the literal that I don't really understand what the point is here. You know? It's like, can't you just show them the fucking part from Star Wars where Luke goes in the cave and Darth Vader's in there and then the helmet breaks and he sees Luke's face and whatever and be like, okay, so obviously that didn't actually happen. Like, Darth, let's set up some assumptions here. Darth Vader was not actually in the cave. This was all happening in Luke Skywalker's mind. Like, from the moment he entered that cave, it was happening in his mind, and then when he exited the cave, things were real again. What happened, and what does that mean? And, like, that to me is good, because it's like, okay, it's got a pretty obvious answer, which is like, well, he knows, you know, that's his father and whatever. But it can have, you know, further answers where it's like, oh, he fears that in killing Darth Vader, he becomes Darth Vader. Like, this is the path to being Darth Vader. But, you know, how can he avoid that path? Or, like, this is, you know, he's not sure that with all the power that he's going to gain, he can avoid becoming Darth Vader. Like, maybe this is a path he's set on and he's got no choice now. Like, there are some things. But it would be hard to interpret that as, for example, Luke Skywalker, you know, was raped as a child. And you're like, I mean, if you want to pose that theory, that's fine. I just don't think that that scene is going to get you there. If someone said that in a film class, I'd be like, well, you got some splaining to do. You're going to have to tell me what specifically makes you go that road. I mean, I'm going to need more. So I just hate that fucking yellow wallpaper. I think I hated it because I was forced to read it way too many times, but also because not just the reading it, but the discussing it in class where you're just like, it kind of just starts to feel like people are just coming up with stuff. You know, because it's like they want to hear themselves talk in English class. They just want to be like, hey, what if it was this? And they want to hear the teacher be like, well, that's an interesting theory. What do the rest of you think? And the rest of us sit there and we're like, oh my God. Can I just go home and play fucking Metroid, please? I have the Super Metroid on Super Nintendo. And I was just thinking about it here because, you know, so many dark corridors and whatever, and that's my interpretation, that Charlotte Perkins Gilman wanted me to think about playing Metroid and then go home and play Metroid. That's what I think. That's my literary theory, sir.
You're not gonna say it, somebody should. Let's talk about two times. Let's talk about bum one, yeah. Asking the questions that nobody could. Like, where are the bone thugs and are they in heart?